supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
I'm John Weber. This is NewsWorks Tonight. Dave Heller is off tonight. Sunoco Pipeline has suspended drilling operations in parts of Chester County, where the company is building the Mariner East 2 pipeline. The company's operation damaged an aquifer, causing 15 households in West Whiteland Township to either lose their water or to have it turn cloudy and unusable. Joining us to talk about this is State Impact Pennsylvania's Susan Phillips. Susan, this is a $3 billion project for Sunoco. Tell us what the pipeline is carrying and where it's going.
It's a 350-mile-long pipeline that's going to be carrying natural gas liquids. That's ethane, propane, and butane from the Marcellus shale fields out in western Pennsylvania to Marcus Hook. And then most of it's going to be shipped overseas, exported to make plastics.
So what happened in Chester County?
What happened was a couple weeks ago, Sunoco's drilling operation pierced an aquifer in Chester County. And this is an area where a lot of people are still hooked up to private water wells, not the public system. And so about a week and a half later, they started seeing problems with their wells. They were either really cloudy, lots of sediment, or some of them, the water just sort of disappeared.
And what happened to the people who drank the water?
Well, there was a concern about contamination in the water, but so far, Sunoco says the tests that they've done have come back in such a way that there were no contaminants in the water. But the problem is, who wants to drink cloudy, dirty water?
And how are residents there reacting?
Well, most of them are not happy, as you can imagine, that they could lose their what they consider pristine well water and have to switch to public water, which they think is not as clean, not as good tasting, but also just they're worried about cost and what's going to happen when they have to dig up the road and put in a new water main. And, you know, if you have a private water well, you don't get a water bill. So they feel like they shouldn't have to be paying for that water into the future.
So, Susan, what's next?
Well, what's next is a lot of these residents will have to make a decision if they stay with the private water well or if they hook up to a public water well. And there was a meeting last night in West Whiteland Township where there were a lot of questions from residents about what kind of conditions Sunoco would put on them if they decided to hook up to a public water system.
Thanks, Susan.
You're welcome.
State Impact Pennsylvania's Susan Phillips. Some closure today in the case of four missing men in Bucks County. District Attorney Matthew Weintraub says their remains have been identified and two men have been charged with homicide.
But I am very, very relieved to say that we brought four young men one step closer to their loved ones and so that they can rest in peace.
Cosmo DiNardo and Sean Kratz both face multiple charges related to the homicides, which took place on a sprawling farm property in Solbury Township. The men, who are called cousins in court documents, worked together in the three of the four slayings. They brought the men to the farm with the promise to sell them marijuana and then shot them. The news pertaining to Donald Trump Jr.'s 2016 election campaign meetings are, for now, having little to no effect on President Trump's approval ratings. NewsWorks Tonight's Dave Heller enlisted the help of Frank Newport, editor-in-chief at the Gallup poll, to gain some insight on the average Trump supporter. They began with the president's unshaken numbers.
Simple question, why?
We've pondered that. His approval rating, as we speak here, 40%. Last week it was 38%. Why isn't it moving? Two explanations my colleagues and myself have come up with as we ponder that very question. One is polarized Americans. We have so much polarization on the right, people who are going to support Trump no matter what, and so much polarization on the left, people who will never say they approve of Trump, that there's much less wiggle room for these approval numbers to move than might have been the case for previous presidents. And explanation number two is Trump himself. He's a highly polarizing person about whom people have formed these very rigid opinions, which may be less likely to move, again, than might have been the case for other presidents.
And of course, we talk about public response, but ultimately it doesn't matter in this case if the public thinks it's a big deal as long as the prosecution thinks it's a big deal.
The two are intertwined. If a special prosecutor comes up with something that's really significant, you know, if Congress were to take up serious looks at Trump and so forth, that could change public opinion. But right now, I just have to reinforce the fact that we've got a core of about 4 out of 10 Americans who seem to be supporting Trump no matter what, no matter what comes out about Trump or what he does.
And I understand Gallup looks to the map to see where that core is strongest.
That's right. We've been working with some scientists down at George Washington University on something called the American Communities Project, and they put every county in America into one of the other kind of broad designations, labels, and I think they're very fascinating. People listening to this right now, Dave, probably are in big cities or in urban suburbs. Those are two of the groupings that that project has come up with, or in college towns, if people are listening in Villanova or Princeton, for example. And all of those aforementioned groupings of counties are ones where Trump's support is extremely low. His net approval is way into the negatives. Like in big cities, it's a minus 43 based on June data. Where is Trump's support the highest? Evangelical hubs. Those are basically rural counties with white individuals in them who are very religious. That's the strongest support for Trump in those counties. Working class country. Of course, that's the famous blue-collar voters who helped him get elected, particularly in Midwestern states like Pennsylvania. And then in rural middle America as well. That's where Trump gets his greatest support. So there's huge differences across America, depending where you are, on your attitudes about President Trump.
To what extent is the president in lockstep with public attitudes when he works to what many say is delegitimizing the media?
There is a war going on. Trump and his supporters have made the decision to demonize a lot of the press coverage of what he's doing, it, giving it those types of names in his tweets, and his spokespeople, of course, do the same thing. We ask, who do you support in this war? Do you support the media? Are you more sympathetic to the media side of this battle or more sympathetic to Trump? And it's divided. Some people are in the middle, but slightly more support the media, but not too much more than support Trump himself. Same thing about should the media get tougher on Trump? Are they too tough already? The public is split along partisan lines, as we might imagine. So in this battle, like in so much else, we have a divided America.
Is Gallup getting any sense that some Americans are pulling back from the news? They're just not buying papers, watching TV, or going online?
Yeah, that's a very fascinating question, and we don't have precise data on that. We do know 6 out of 10, 60% of Americans say that the news media reports and stories are often inaccurate. 38% say they get their facts straight. That's a fairly new phenomenon in the last 15 years. We had a point back in 2000, which is interesting, just after the disputed election between Gore and W. Bush, where 65% said the news was often inaccurate. But prior to that, going back into the 80s when Reagan was president, Americans were much more likely to say that the news media got their facts straight. All by way of saying that in recent years, we do have a situation, which Trump, of course, is playing into, where a lot of Americans are more skeptical of the news media than they have been in decades past.
Thanks, Frank.
You bet, Dave.
Frank Newport, editor-in-chief at the Gallup Poll. He joins us each week at this time on Newsworks Tonight.
A baseball field in Pendel, Bucks County, is the latest home to a traveling replica of Vietnam Veterans Memorial. WHYY's Kyrie Greenberg reports that despite the rain, people from across the region came to be the first in line to see their loved ones' names.
Arlie George Abraham.
James Joseph Abraham.
Each of the over 50,000 names on the Vietnam Veterans Memorial wall will be read this weekend at the Pendel baseball field. John Cashman, a retired firefighter from Mayfair, is a fixture of Vietnam memorial services. He says it makes sense to bring it to a ball field, since many soldiers were killed at a very young age. He saw the wall last time it was in town, at Father Judge High School in Northeast Philly. 27 alumni from that school were killed in Vietnam. Cashman also enlisted right out of high school.
And I think that if you served in Vietnam, you never forget it. It's hard to explain this if you haven't been there. It's one of those deals like I wouldn't take $1 million to do it again, but I wouldn't take $10 million not to have done it. You know, and Thankfully, I came through it okay.
Captain David Christian, a decorated Army veteran who authored legislation around Agent Orange and post-traumatic stress disorder, is used to addressing presidents and senators. But having the Vietnam Memorial so close to home in Bucks County made him emotional.
Three of those boys that are back there died in my arms in combat situations. Where do you medevac? How best to serve them? It's to serve those that are walking today with crutches, carrying a leg over the shoulder, checking their new eye that they had made.
The memorial is open to the public through Sunday. For WHYY News, Kyrie Greenberg.
The basketball world's biggest curiosity will be at the Wells Fargo Center in Philadelphia on Sunday. The Big Three League pits former pros against each other in a 3-on-3 half-court format. The league has plenty of star power, but does it have staying power? WHYY's Avi Wolfman-Arendt reports.
This summer, we're changing the game.
You might recognize that voice. It belongs to Ice Cube, the rapper, actor, and now co-founder of Big Three Basketball. Basketball fans will recognize the names he's about to say.
I'm talking about White Chocolate, Kmart, Dr. J, and the answer, Allen Iverson.
All of those former NBA stars are now either playing or coaching in the new Big Three. And that's not the only novelty for this upstart league.
Half court, 3-on-3. And introducing the 4-point shot. Game changer.
Yes, there are quirks in this new Big Three league. Too many to list here. But the primary selling point is the players and coaches. The idea is that people will pay to watch former standouts play a pared-down version of basketball.
Well, I think it's an interesting idea.
Joel Maxey is a sports economist at Drexel University.
The big advantage is they're playing in the off-season, so people are familiar with basketball, but they're not going head-to-head with the NBA.
And, of course, there are the big names. The NBA has always been a star-driven league. The Big Three is hoping the power of some of those former stars hasn't totally faded. Maxey says there is at least some precedent for this type of venture.
Jack Nicklaus, Tom Watson defending their title here in 2011.
Great shot.
I think the most similar enterprise is the senior tours in golf, and those have been quite successful.
But Maxey and Temple sports economist Michael Leeds see a problem with that parallel.
Golf is a sport in which the physical prowess of a player is not, at least not immediately evident.
Basketball, on the other hand, usually features big-time athleticism.
When you see a player whom you used to remember as being able to rise well above the rim and is no longer able to do that, it is much more evident in a sport like basketball than it is in golf. So this is really asking a lot of the fans.
So far, the Big Three has held games in Brooklyn, Charlotte, and Tulsa. And while the games have been spirited, it's certainly not as high-flying as NBA action. They're kind of a throwback, relying more on dribbling, passing, and shooting prowess.
And it hits! Big-time shot for Bibby! And the Ghost Ballers take a 1-point lead.
Another wrinkle is that the 8 Big Three teams don't represent cities. They travel together from town to town in a barnstorming format. League organizers hope fans will travel far and wide whenever the show comes closest to their hometown. Marcus Gwynn is one of those fans.
You know, I'm trying to get the full experience, trying to get a cheesesteak, you know, maybe hit a bar or two.
Gwynn is trekking to Philly this weekend from Howard County, Maryland, between D.C. and Baltimore. He's hoping to see his favorite player, Allen Iverson.
You know, breaking ankles was something that was hot when I was growing up, so Iverson was the king of that.
Gwynn has been impressed by the games so far. Sure, it's not NBA quality, but the players seem to care, and the 3-on-3 format feels relatable to him, like something out of his own childhood.
If you ever played basketball, I mean, even if you suck, you want to play with your friends. So, like, I'll go to the court. I'm terrible, but I'll go to the court with my friends and play basketball just because I'm competitive.
Gwynn thinks the league can stick around if it continues to bring in new retired players every year. Plus, he says, everyone needs some good sports action to hold them over until football season begins in the fall. Avi Wolfman-Arendt, WHYY News.
With Independence Day celebrations behind us, it's time to turn to another country's patriotic holiday. Today is Bastille Day. WHYY's Kimberly Haas reports on a long-running, much-beloved event marking the holiday, Philly style, that's coming up this weekend.
Bastille Day commemorates the 18th-century storming of the infamous prison in Paris, a watershed moment in the French Revolution. 23 years ago in Philadelphia, Eastern State Penitentiary saw itself as a natural host for a local celebration to drum up some business.
So it is about kind of unironically appropriating French culture for financial gain.
That's John Darbo of the Bearded Ladies Cabaret.
A bunch of people were sitting at London Grill and looked up at the Bastille and said, "We have a Bastille. Don't foreign people celebrate that? Maybe we could use that to bring business here at Fairmount during the summer."
The result was a reenactment of the French Revolution in an hour-long song and dance performance.
It went from famine to Napoleon's war. You and me, let's start a revolution.
There's also historical characters who offer commentary on current events.
We replaced Napoleon this year because his politics were getting too conservative for us, and we replaced Napoleon with Sojourner Truth, who is the opposite of alternative fact. So Sojourner Truth has come to save us from alternative fact, who is played by Veronica Chapman Smith with Opera Philadelphia.
And we'll never be royals. It's not in our Philly blood. That kind of luck's just
in the midst of song parodies, drag queens, and thousands of tasty cakes thrown from the prison towers, Jarbo says there's also a serious side to the performance.
We want to be creating a space for Philadelphians to laugh and sing and also think about what things they want to fight for. Obviously, with all of the political turmoil that's going on right now in the country, we've ramped it up a bit.
Jarbo, in the guise of the MC, French chanteuse Edith Piaf, offers advice to the 3,000 or so attendees.
The important thing to know about the revolution is to show up with your sunscreen, with your hidden beer and your hidden flask, and prepare yourself for the avalanche of tasty cake. Maybe practice with a friend. Have them throw it right at your face, and don't flinch. You don't want to flinch when the revolution is coming.
The Eastern State Penitentiary Bastille Day celebration is Saturday at 5:30 p.m. Kimberly Haas, WHYY News.
Finally tonight, it's big. It's red. And it can swallow a diner whole. It's the Blob. Of Blobfest, which returns to Phoenixville this weekend for an 18th year of celebrating the 1958 sci-fi horror film that gave Steve McQueen his feature film debut and put the town on the map. The three-day event begins tonight, as it usually does, with lots of screaming as festival goers run out of Phoenixville's Colonial Theater. It's an homage to the scene in The Blob, where the titular alien life form devours movie audiences like a bucket of popcorn. There will be plenty of showings of The Blob alongside other corny horror flicks like It Came from Outer Space, The House on Haunted Hill, and The Lost Skeleton Returns Again. But it's not all screams. The festival also features parades, vendors, a costume contest, and even a classic monster makeup demo from artist Donald David. And those with a more refined palate can enjoy the festivities while nibbling on bright red blob sauce. Yum. That's all for tonight's show. Newsworks Tonight is produced by Shai Benyakov, Kimberly Haas, Ty Johnson, and Brett Rader. We had help this week from our intern, Kate Summers. The news director is Eugene Son. John Musoni is Assistant Vice President of News Operations. Sandra Clark is Vice President of News and Civic Dialogue. Thanks for joining us, and have a great weekend. I'm John Weber for Newsworks Tonight.